Acquired immune deficiency syndrome is the hottest health issue of the late 1980s, and recently the U.S. Center for Disease Control has issued a pamphlet about it to every home in America. In just a moment, we'll hear from two victims of AIDS, innocent victims, as they tell a story the homosexual community doesn't want shared. Stay tuned. This is Focus on the Family, hosted by psychologist Dr. James Dobson, the author of such best-selling books as Dr. Dobson Answers Your Questions, What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women, Emotions, Can You Trust Them?, and Love for a Lifetime. I'm Mike Trout, inviting you to stay with us as we focus on the family. And here it is, the middle of the week and the end of the month, as we present a Wednesday edition of our broadcast on the 27th of July. And, Doctor, our regular listeners know that we deal with issues on occasion here on this broadcast, and one of those issues in the past several years has been the disease of AIDS. We've come at it clinically, and today we want to approach it from a different direction, don't we?
That's right, Mike. We've talked about it medically, the implications of it. We've talked about what it might mean for the human family. But today we're going to talk about it in terms of the personal tragedy of a particular family. It is awesome in scope when you're describing perhaps 100 million people who may die of this disease in the next several years. Those are the predictions. Some people feel that they are conservative. But perhaps the saddest aspect of this epidemic is seen when it touches innocent victims, either hemophiliacs or little babies who are born with it, children with AIDS, or the spouses of those who have been into an immoral lifestyle. And it's that aspect that we want to talk about today. And we have invited two members of a family to be with us today to tell their story, and it's a very dramatic story. They've asked to be anonymous, and we'll respect that. We're going to call the mother, Mary, and the daughter, Susan. And, Mike, electronically, you have kind of masked their voices so they would not be recognized.
Yes.
And when you hear their story, you'll understand why it's important to do that. First of all, it's good to have you all here. And, Mary, let me ask you a couple of questions to get started. How many years have you been married?
Dr. Dobson, we were married 37 years.
37 years. Mm-hmm. And describe your marital relationship for me. What were those 37 years like?
I would say, let me describe the family first. The family was a large family. It was a Christian, very strong Christian family. Very civically, socially, and politically involved in the community. It was really a family that perpetrate a great deal of leadership in the community.
Your husband's a professional.
My husband is a professional man. And as far as the marriage was concerned, it had its ups and downs. There wasn't as much love in it as I wanted. But of course, I suppose that's the complaint of a great many wives. There was little or no attention paid to me. I was alone a great deal. And of course, my husband's job required him to travel a great deal, and as a result of that, there wasn't too much accountability as to what his mobility was all about or where he was going or who he was with, and I was urged not to ask those questions, and in order to keep peace, I seldom asked them. I just honestly trusted him.
And he went to church with you every Sunday?
Every Sunday, yes.
Susan, what do you remember from your childhood, especially the relationship between your mother and father?
I thought it was a normal family. We were considered the all-American family in our neighborhood. We went to church, went to the finest Christian and private schools that money could afford. And my parents didn't talk to each other that intimately or that much, but I thought that was that generation. They just never communicated with each other.
The marriage was never threatened as you saw it?
No, not necessarily. No, my father was gone a great deal, but every once in a while he'd take the kids on his business trips, and it was just a very average family, all-American family.
And then, Mary, a few years ago, you came down with a vaginal infection and you went to your physician. Describe that experience.
I had a vaginal infection for which I was treated, and the physician gave me the medication and also gave me medication to give my husband, which of course surprised me, but without any further questions, I assumed that he knew what it was, and my husband took the medication. I took the medication. The infection cleared up eventually, but But the next time I went in for another vaginal infection, as the physician was leafing through my record, he said, well, he said, this isn't the gonorrhea you had last time. And I was so shocked that in any way I should be even connected to anything like that, that I fainted on the table.
You actually passed out?
On the table. When I came to and asked him to repeat what he had said, he assured me that, yes, that's what he had said. And I asked him, why didn't you tell me at the time that I was being treated for that? He said, I wanted to respect your privacy. I know now that
he was protecting your husband.
Well, I didn't know about that, but I know now that if he had warned me at that time and done what he was supposed to do, and that is to trace the source of that infection, that our family would not be in the position that they're in now.
You went home and confronted your husband, obviously, and he said what?
He said, well, he said, I certainly have no signs of it, and that's certainly something that would show up on me. And so, therefore, there must be some indication that your behavior has been questionable, which, of course, immediately put me against the wall in a position of trying to defend myself.
So he actually blamed it on you. And as we'll find out later, he had every reason to know that he himself was the one that had spread it to you.
Right.
Susan, did you know about that? Did your mother share that with you at the time?
I had no idea. I mean, I don't think my mother knew what the cause of it was, and I think she blamed herself for a lot of it, too. We suspected that my father might have been having extramarital relations because I found a letter that he had scratched on a yellow pad and accidentally had left it lying in one of the drawers. But I thought it was to a woman. It talked about sending $500 in unmarked bills. And I was so mad at him because I thought, he was giving some stranger all this money. And when he gives me $100 at Christmas, and I'm just so grateful for the money that he gives to me. And but that was really the only indication I have that there was unfaithfulness there.
All right, that was the first clue that your husband, Mary, may have been very deeply involved in another lifestyle, in immoral behavior. But then he began to be ill. He came down with a disease. Describe it.
Last fall, he was slated for heart surgery for replacement of a valve. And as a result of that surgery, there was a certain recovery time that I thought was normal, but after that recovery time, I noticed that his weight was dropping and that he had a continually low-grade fever. So I became concerned. And in speaking to his physician, he said to me that he didn't know what else to do, that perhaps I should seek counsel somewhere else, and I got in a new team of doctors, urged them to admit him into the hospital, which they did. And he underwent a series of tests. At that time, the series of tests showed that he had developed, as the doctor told me, histoplasmosis. That concerned me, and having a medical connection in the family, I asked, what could I do in order to be sure that he was being diagnosed correctly and had the right treatment? So that connection suggested that I call in my own physician and have him come in as a consultant, which I did. I called the cardiologist and suggested to him that I wanted my own physician called in as a consultant. And at that time, he told me, well, it really isn't necessary because your husband has AIDS.
Hmm. That must have hit you like a ton of bricks. What was the effect of it?
Actually, Dr. Dobson, I suppose I was so naive at the time that having been aware of this letter that I had found, that we had found several years earlier, I knew that he was probably involved in extramarital affairs. And I thought that the AIDS was either a result of the blood transfusions which he had received during the surgery, or perhaps far out would be a contact with a drug user as far as extramarital relations are concerned. And it wasn't until several days later that after he was confronted with the medical team, who asked him what his behavior had been and told him that it would be necessary to check the 30 donors who had been responsible for donating blood for his surgery, that he admitted that, yes, he had spent most of his adult life in homosexual behavior.
Now, Mike, I want to make sure that no one misses what was just said, because it's kind of between the lines here. But Mary's husband, we'll call him Roy, had AIDS, and his physician knew it. And he was not able to tell Mary, his spouse, that he had AIDS by law.
The physician was not
able. The physician could not tell her and would not have revealed it to her had she not pressed him and said she was bringing in her own doctor as a consultant. And then it tipped his hand, and he had to reveal to her, here is an infectious disease that put her at risk, and yet, by law, she could not be told of it, and he had to break the law to reveal it to her.
He could have been told if my father had consented to it, but my father sat with my mother for 2 days. He knew he had AIDS. She knew he had AIDS, but he didn't know that she knew, and he never mentioned it to her that he was dying of AIDS.
And he would not have permitted the doctor to tell her.
No, in fact, my mother told my father that she had told all the children that he had AIDS. He was absolutely livid with her, was so upset, and he expected her to bear the burden of this by herself.
And that is the incredible stupidity of the law now, which protects the anonymity of the patient, even to the exclusion of the rights of the innocent who are living with him.
All our laws right now in the books are modeled to protect the confidentiality and the human rights and the dignity of the AIDS patient. The laws are not guaranteed to protect the public health or the innocent.
You now know, Susan, that your father was into this so-called alternate lifestyle, the gay lifestyle, for many, many years. How long do you think?
He had rectal lesions in 1958, which was 2 years after I was born, and three children before the end of my family. And what's scary is that he had so little regard for future children that one of us could have contracted those diseases from my father's activities.
So it's been going on perhaps for 2 decades or more.
Possibly three.
Mary, you had no indication of that.
None.
You sat in church with him.
Sat in church with him. There were some flags that went up, as I say, the diseases, that sexually transmitted diseases that I had. The fact that he had a post office box. And I always wondered about that and questioned him on it. And he would say, well, it's business. But, you know, when you think about it, if it's a business-connected activity, then why isn't your office good enough to receive that type of mail? He had 15 credit cards that were charged to the hilt. And by the hilt, I mean $10,000, $15,000 on each one of them.
My mother did not have access to, so she never knew what those charges were on those credit cards.
Nor did... There again, I suppose it was blind trust, nor did I ever really ask for an accounting of what his income was. And so therefore, I was on a tight budget and never realized until just a few months ago that he had almost unlimited funds.
And there was a very low level of accountability in your relationship. You said in my office that that was a very important factor. I had said on our radio broadcast some years ago that Shirley and I have a very high level of accountability, so much so that if I ever did anything wrong, she would know it that afternoon. She could feel it. She could see it in my eyes. She knows everything there is to know about me. You knew very little about this man that you lived with for 37 years.
Right. Actually, Dr. Johnson, your program was the one that made me aware that accountability was important, because I had been conditioned from very early on in our marriage that I was not to ask any questions about the business. I was not to ask any questions about what trips he was taking, about any of the clients that he was involved with. And after a while, you learn that to keep peace, you just don't ask those questions.
What I also thought was kind of strange, too, is my father had no hobbies, no outside interests. He had no male friends. He never had people that would come to the door and just go out to play tennis with him. It was just really... And what was interesting, too, is that my father was so moral to us. He gave us lectures on virginity, and he never even let us get our ears pierced, because that was degrading the body. And if God intended you have holes in yours, he would have made you with holes in yours. And I remember how on days of church, he used to sit in the car in the driveway, honk the horn, saying, we're going to be late for church, you got to leave. And those were my memories of my father.
Susan, what a shock this must have been to you. It came to light last Christmas, and you and I talked on the phone at that time repeatedly. What, describe what the impact of it was.
At first it was unbelief. And then they asked all the family to come home to meet with in psychiatric sessions. And there was just such disbelief and such anger. And we'd go into my father's hospital room, and he'd tell us that he was just on the fringes of homosexuality. And then we'd find out from my mother that she'd had venereal diseases 20 years ago. And he'd say, on his dying bed, he gave us the key to his private post office box, and we found pornographic letters in there. And we found letters that explained some of the activities, including what we believe was bestiality. And he said all those, letters went to the wrong box because they were to his homosexual name rather than to his personal name. And so there was such confusion, we didn't really know what to believe.
He did not die. He is in remission now.
Right, right. He's in one of six homes throughout the country, group homes for AIDS victims.
Mary, we now get to the most painful part of the story, because the physicians told you that living with a person with AIDS for all those years, and they think he may have had AIDS for as long as 10 years, or at least had the virus for as long as 10 years, that you were obviously exposed to it, yet they downplayed that.
Right. They told me that I would have to sign a consent form in order to have the HIV test, which I promptly did, but they assured me that the chances of my having that HIV virus were fairly nil, since the figures were so low on spouses. I think the figure is 1 in 1,000 spouses getting the virus.
Do you believe that?
Partner.
No, I do not believe that.
You know, what can you believe? The news is so managed in this regard. Gene Antonio, Mike, of course, wrote the book called The AIDS Cover-Up, and that so much of the information that we get is screened through that homosexual lobby, and they have great influence with the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. So you don't know what to believe.
The Washington Post reported several weeks ago, and this statistic is just amazing to me, that one of every 30 males between the age of 20 and 50 carries HIV positive. And let me emphasize, HIV positive is as infectious as all the stages of AIDS, including the final stages of AIDS.
You do not have to have AIDS in order to spread the HIV virus.
All right.
With that understanding, 1 in 30, Mike.
That's hard to believe. That really is amazing.
I think that may be closer to the truth than the other things that we've been in. The Washington Post usually is on the liberal side of the agenda. But you were told that even though it was fairly unlikely that you'd have the disease, Mary, that you should be tested.
That is something that I couldn't believe, because they downplayed the fact that I might carry the virus, in spite of the fact that they told me that all it would have taken for my husband was one contact with an infected person. And here I had been living with him for 37 years. And psychologically, I knew when my appointment 2 weeks later was due that the news would be such that I was informed that I was HIV positive.
And that you were in the ARC stages. You had the symptoms, the AIDS-related complex.
In other words, in simple terms, you are a pre-AIDS patient yourself.
Right.
How long do they tell you you have to live, Mary?
The only figure that they have, because of course the knowledge is so limited in that area, but they told me anywhere from 1 month to 5 years.
How did you deal with that as an innocent victim, as the wife who had raised a house full of children and been loyal and faithful to your husband, tried to meet his needs and be what he needed you to be? Mary, how did you deal with it?
Actually, Dr. Dobson, I knew that the only way to survive this myself was to forgive the sinner. Hate the sin, but forgive the sinner. On the assumption that bitterness only injures the vessel or is the acid that injures the vessel that contains it. And I have dealt with this by being faithful to Scripture, where whenever my mental computer goes back to unpleasant statistics in my married life, as the Scripture says, "Thy word have I hid in my heart, that I may not sin against thee." And I find that this is probably the most healing thing that can be done, is to know that His promises are fulfilling and that you can have His peace.
Mary, you are going for treatment at a major center where many homosexuals are also being treated. What's it like to walk in there?
Dr. Dawson, this is probably the most degrading thing that any human being can do who is a victim of a disease that they had absolutely no connection with. I find it the most shameful thing to walk into a waiting room that is full of those who by choice have the disease and to be considered one of them.
Or they have exposed themselves by choice, haven't they? How did you react when you discovered that this man that you'd looked up to, this man that you called father, along with the other six children in your family, how did you react when you discovered the sin that he was into and what he had done not only to himself, but to your mother? Could you believe it when this news suddenly broke over your family?
It was almost too much of a shock. We learned on Saturday that he had AIDS. We learned on Sunday that he was dying. We learned on Monday that he'd been a homosexual for 20 or 30 years. And the man that we had trusted since we were children was not what he appeared to be.
What did it do to you?
I didn't believe it. I didn't want to believe it. But then everything just came to light. I started thinking of all the trips he'd taken to Carmel, California to see his dear aunt in Carmel. And then a series of trips to see his stepmother in New York. And I was always so proud of my dad that he took care of his older relations like that, and that he was supporting them when they didn't have spouses to support them. But then I realized why he'd been out there so many times.
Plus, he had the perfect cover. He was a professional who had to be on the road a lot.
Right.
And Mary, you indicated yesterday that he never told you where he was going or how long he'd be gone.
No.
And so there was no accountability to you.
No, but in fairness to him, I also have to explain that he did call me every night. And so because he called me, I never thought that I had to check up on him. And also, Dr. Dobson, there was no reason for me not to trust a husband. There's no reason for any woman not to trust the person she's married to. And I, going back over it in my mind, you know, as I have these many months, I think, if you can't trust your husband, who in the world can you trust?
And the two of you, in fact, the whole family, was in church.
Right.
Your husband
right.
sat beside you
right.
and listened to sermon after sermon
right.
and acted like he believed it. And you really didn't know
right.
that his lifestyle contradicted everything he was hearing.
I have to also say that when I finally did confront him, as I had said yesterday, I had sat in his hospital room for 2 days and he never mentioned it to me that he had it, although I knew it. He didn't know that I knew it. He never revealed anything like this. And when I finally confronted with him, I said, "Why in the world did you do this to your family?" And his only comment was, "I thought I could get away with it."
He has even now accepted no responsibility.
Right. And even when I said to him, you know, if this had been going on all of our married life and I was such an impediment, why didn't you leave me? Why didn't you make some excuse for leaving me? And his only remark to that was, "I like the life I had with you too much."
Knowing what you now know, what was his lifestyle like? How deeply into the homosexual way of life was he?
As deep as you can get, Dr. Dobson. He had a credit card for a bathhouse. And you see, this community has their own vocabulary. If I had understood the letter that he had written one of his lovers that Susan had discovered, I would have understood that this was a homosexual, because contact was mentioned continually throughout that letter, and contact is what they consider any coupling mm-hmm. with the same sex.
But you didn't know to look for it.
And you see, this is the way they communicate with each other. They have their own vocabulary. But he also had a private post office box, and now I understand that that is a sign of something's up and should be a red flag to any wife if a husband has a private post office box, because if it's associated with business, why can't he receive this mailing at his business? Mm-hmm. If it's associated with something else, then this is why he needs the private post office box. And we also found that during in this private post office box, he communicated with his sodomous friends and also would receive the pornography that goes along with it.
Now, Mary, yesterday, incredibly, you mentioned that the physician who treated your husband and knew that he had AIDS was legally prohibited from telling you, his wife, of his diagnosis. And he did it anyway because you pressed him and threatened to bring in another physician, not even knowing what you were
right.
doing. And
right.
and he then broke the law, essentially, and
right.
told you. He also told you something else that shocked me. I had never heard this, but he told you that you were in danger. Explain what he said. People are not even going to be able to believe this. Explain what he said.
Dr. Dobson, I know I've been very active politically in the community, and so therefore know the political ropes and know how political
influence
is generated. So I said to the doctor, I said, I'm going to start a national movement which will expose some of the things that the homosexual community is trying to keep from the public, and perhaps the communications media is trying to keep from the public. And immediately, not only the doctor with whom I was speaking, but the psychiatrist who was also present, warned me, and they said, you would last 2 weeks. You are dealing with a very strong underworld. As a result of that, I changed the locks in my home. We thought of changing the phone number, but didn't. And we're really amazed at the number of telephone calls we got for several weeks afterwards of the young men my husband had been supporting who were panicking because the funds had been cut off.
The physician actually told you to change your telephone number
right.
and to change the locks on your door.
Right.
You told me last Christmas that he said that the gay community will not permit it to be known that an innocent victim caught this disease from an avowed homosexual.
Right. Okay, but there are a lot of people who do not realize what the homosexual it is. Before I really was exposed to this myself in my own life, I worked on issue in my job that I deal with, and I looked at the AIDS epidemic as being statistics and numbers and demographics, and now I realize that it's affecting innocent families. And people think that the homosexual culture is basically the odd couple. One person cooks and one person cleans, and they live together, and they might fondle, and they might kiss, and they might have nice conversations. But anyone who has seen what we've seen personally knows that this is the most perverted, unnatural use of a human body that ever existed. My father, over the 20, 30 years that he was involved in this, and we'll probably never know how long or the extent of his activities, he had lice, he had herpes, he had gonorrhea of the throat, he had rectal lesions, he had hepatitis, and I could go on. But what a person will allow themselves to go through to satisfy their own obsession is amazing. And we're going through his drawers to pack him up because he's now in a group home in another part of the country that my mother lives in. We're packing up his things, and we found tubes. We have no idea what they're used for. We found medicine that he was using to treat himself for herpes, and he never shared with my mother that he had had herpes. We found pictures of young boys in his drawers that were in our neighborhood. And no one can tell me that this is natural, that's an alternative lifestyle, that's between two consenting adults, because obviously my mother had to bear the ramifications of my father's activities.
He had all these diseases, and he was sleeping with you, obviously, as his wife, and transmitting some of these diseases to you. and never bothered to even tell you or warn you. Mm-hmm. Nor did he accept any responsibility when you contracted these diseases. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing, Mike?
Absolutely. Is he talking to you? Is he sharing some of the details at all? Or have you had to conduct your own investigation to get what facts you have?
Well, actually, Mike, I was so hurt by all this that I have had absolutely no contact with him myself since he left home. But I do receive letters from him on a fairly regular basis, and he sent roses at Valentine's and lilies at Easter time.
As if nothing happened.
As if nothing has happened, and he does tell...
Not in a repentant way now.
No.
He has not called to say, I've sinned, I'm sorry, I have now inflicted this disease on you.
No. That he treats very casually, because the AIDS house that he's in now, they repeatedly tell him not to be hard on himself for having infected me, because after all, he didn't know he had it, so how in the world could he know that he was in any way endangering me? But of course, he isn't willing to admit that he also had all those other diseases and was still sleeping with me.
Mike, if you can believe it, this man is now speaking in various places. And he's one of the subjects that he speaks on is what it's like to be rejected by a family because he has a disease.
My father is basically in his glory right now. He is a very articulate, very bright man. And he is now speaking to healthcare workers and telling them what it is like to be rejected by a family, what it's like to sob on his bed and be in emotional pain. And he brags that he can bring a group to tears and that he can bring them to their feet in a standing ovation at the end of his speeches. But what's interesting, he never mentions once in a speech about the hurt to his family, about how his children are undergoing psychiatric care, about any remorse he might feel about his wife who has contracted the disease like he has. That's never mentioned. And these public health care workers are being fed a bag of goods that he is a victim of the disease, when the victim is really having to hide her head in shame and not be able to talk to anybody about this issue. But he's out in front talking to the world.
What is his life expectancy?
Well, he had pneumocystic carinii pneumonia in January, and they give him 10 months after that. But he is undergoing ADT treatment, and he has not reconciled himself to the fact that he is going to die, and probably very soon. He believes that he's going to go on forever.
Mary, what are you feeling now? You have this virus in your veins, and barring a miracle or a touch from God, you will go through what other AIDS patients have gone through. How angry are you at this man?
Actually, Dr. Dobson, I've forgiven him. I hate his sin. I think for my own sanity, I have forgiven him, for I know that bitterness is really the acid that eats through the vessel that contains it. And I find that God's promises have fulfilled all my needs at the present time. He tells us, you know, fear not, for I'm with you. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will defend thee. I will protect thee. I will uphold you. That's all I need.
You are actively memorizing scripture like that, aren't you?
I find, Dr. Dobson, that every time my computer goes through the past, the best way I can turn it off is by putting his word in its place.
Susan, what are you feeling now for your father?
What's interesting is probably the hardest thing for me about this whole issue is the division it's caused between the siblings. Some of us have rejected him totally like I have. Others aren't willing to face the facts. Others are trying to justify what he did and are sending him care packages. They are trying to read things that justify that homosexuality might be an alternative lifestyle. And it's caused so much division in a before a very close family.
So, in fact, this is not just a disease of one man, but it is now a disease of an entire family, isn't it?
Yes.
Are there grandchildren involved, and how are they handling it?
The grandchildren are very young. The oldest one is 10 years old, and none of them know about it. But I constantly go over my head, how am I ever going to tell my young son, who's 8 months now, what his grandfather did and the inheritance that he has before him.
As a matter of fact, Susan, your mother was in the delivery room when that baby was born.
She was, and my mother would have been the one I would have asked for blood if there had been complications with my pregnancy and the labor. And I would have been breastfeeding my child, and there would have been another two generations that would have been infected because of my father's lifestyle.
Mary, what do you have to say here in the last few moments to the wives who are out there? I know you feel a certain responsibility to them. We don't want to plant suspicion where it's inappropriate, and we don't want to, you know, create conflict between husbands and wives when it is obviously not the same kind of situation that you were involved in. But what would you say?
Well, the first thing I'd like to just say, Dr. Dobson, when you ask me, you know, how has it affected me, I must say that probably the most painful thing I feel, actually, one of my greatest blessings are the fact that in spite of the marriage that I had such beautiful children. And perhaps at this time, one of the most painful things to me is to see the mask of pain and suffering that they all bear now, which a few months ago wasn't there. And that, of course, has to hurt at the root of any mother's hope, really. But I would tell women out there, and wives in particular, I would say, be accountable to your husbands. Have your husbands accountable to you. Know what's going on in the public schools. Be aware of what health education and sex education is being taught. For I know that the homosexual community has, it's one of their goals, to indoctrinate. And how best to indoctrinate it? Indoctrinate a young person, but through the classroom.
In fact, they are recruiting. I said that once before here on Focus on the Family, and I say it again. There is an effort now to recruit new young homosexuals because so many are dying. You have seen evidence of that.
Right. There is a radio show in Washington, D.C. that airs every Sunday night, a program called Coming Out, and it's led by a commentator who takes calls from the homosexual community only, and it talks about safer sex on occasion. It talks about how wonderful it is and how free an experience it is to come out of the closet when you've had these desires, and how heterosexuals just don't understand the wonder of a homosexual lifestyle. And then between the commercial breaks, it advertises a 965 number that people can call for 60 cents to get 10 homosexual contacts so that these people don't have to go to the bar scene. So here it is, an entrepreneur trying to nab people into the homosexual lifestyle to make money for his own good. And I think the irony of being a Christian and seeing what's happened to our family is the knowledge that I have the redemptive power of Christ's blood that is pure, that is clean, that is spiritually uplifting. And I know that I've experienced Christ's blood in my own life, and to see the impurity of the blood that is just ruining my whole family because of one man's sin. And if I can communicate any message, it would be the truth of Christ, because that's the only answer.
Mike, we ask our listeners to pray for this family. We will pray for you, Mary. We've been praying for you. And I don't know what the future holds, but I know the Lord is going to go with you. You sat in my office a few minutes ago, and I marveled at your spirit. I marveled at your ability to leave this in the Lord's hands and not allow bitterness to erode your peace of mind and destroy you emotionally and spiritually. And the Lord is going to protect you from bitterness. I believe only He could give you the spirit that you have. I just ask our listeners to continue to hold you all up. Call them Mary and Susan, if you will. And Mary's husband, Roy, I suppose. That's not their names, but the Lord knows them, and He will know who you're talking about. And I believe the Lord will sustain you as you go through whatever you're facing in the years ahead. And I believe through your honesty and openness here, we began to get another picture. The media isn't telling your story.
Right.
You will not hear
right.
what you all have said in the secular press. They won't reveal it. So, again, thank you all for opening yourself on these 2 days, and I know you will stay in touch with us, and we love you.
Absolutely.
Our arms are about you.
Thank you, Dr.
And again, our guests have been today a mother and a daughter who have been sharing the impact that AIDS and homosexuality has had on their family, the personal experience that they've been through. And as Dr. Dobson just said, we have changed the names of our guests to protect their identity. Most of you, I imagine, probably figured out that we have also altered their voices electronically so that we can obscure their identity even more. We mentioned that at the beginning of the program, but some of you, I know, don't always catch the start of the broadcast. And this program has been furnished by Focus on the Family. Your host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back tomorrow when we once more turn our hearts toward home.